Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. We continue our Hush coverage. The main event today, we are talking about the first volume of Streets of Gotham, Hush Money, which is Detective Comics 852, Batman 685, and the first four issues of Streets of Gotham. And then we are checking in on the ongoing Hush, Hush 2. We are up to Batman 160, Hush 2, Part 3, The Night. But I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing pretty well, Bob. If you've been following our coverage, you know, we're trying to look at every single thing that Hush has ever been in, comic book-wise. And he's been in a lot more than what I thought, Bob. Had a lot of stories that have transpired that I really feel like the new Hush 2 is not even like, it's not even acknowledging.
It's almost like nothing has happened since Hush 1, Matt.
Yeah, but there's a lot that's happened between Hush 1 and Hush 2. And a lot has happened with Hush. And the more I read, man, they really did flesh out this character. I knew about Heart of Hush, and I knew about the Gotham Knights crap, but all this other stuff with Paul Dini and these little one-shots we've read here and there, I'm just amazed at how much more to this character there is than what I remember.
Well, and I just want to add in two slight corrections. In case we have any hostile listeners out there, Matt and I are not morons. We both knew that Jeff Loeb would ignore every other Hush comic. We knew that. Matt's just saying that for effect. And then the second thing is, I had a painful reminder of this because on my own, I was revisiting Batman Eternal. I didn't remember how bad it was. I'd mostly like left it from my memory. Although my friend Noah remembered how bad it was. He never read it. He just remembers listening to me complain about it and tell him not to read it. And so he was able to remind me of how bad I used to think it was. And the reason I was going back to Batman Eternal is boring, but, you know, I really like the James Tynion Detective Comics run. And he was a writer on Batman Eternal and Batman and Robin Eternal. So I like to believe that, oh, it's his third run. So the first two runs must be good too. But they're not. Batman Eternal and Batman and Robin Eternal are terrible. And I bring all this up to say, though, that he's not the big villain, but the guy they want you to think is the big villain of Batman Eternal before they reveal the actual big villain is Hush.
Yes.
So there's no way in the world we're going to do Batman Eternal. I don't have that in me. Yeah. We're not doing Batman Eternal. And even though it's somewhat fun, we're not going to do the Josh Williamson Batman and Robin comic that introduces Shush, the female Hush. It actually is good. It's better than most other Hush comics, but man, this is too much Hush. Once we get through the Paul Dini stuff and we get through Hatoosh or Hush Part 2, I can't do Hush for a long time. It's been too much.
It's just crazy because you hear Hush 2 and think, man, we haven't seen this guy in a while. No, this dude's been around forever. This is 2009, what we're talking about today.
That sounds right.
This character's got way more history than I thought. And it's not just from the video games, too, because a lot of these plots were copied over from the video game, or not copied, I should say. Paul Dini, we mentioned last podcast, he wrote the plot piece for Gotham Arkham City. And that in that Hush does the whole changing his face to Bruce Wayne thing, which we see here. Let's get into this, which is much better than what we're seeing so far with Hush 2.
We're doing Streets of Gotham, Volume 1, Hush Money. We're going to start out with this two-part story that's in Detective Comics 852 and Batman 685, and then we're going to cover the first four issues of Streets of Gotham. Detective 852 is entitled Reconstruction. What goes down in that issue, Matt?
Well, Bob, a penniless Hush with the face of Bruce Wayne uses his guise to rebuild his wealth across the world, but is stopped by Catwoman in Vietnam.
And then for my favorite panel in this issue, Matt, I wanted to pick, mostly it's just because of this character. Do you know Tasmanian Devil?
Okay, so when I read Tasmanian Devil, of course, the first thing that pops up in my head is Looney Tunes guy, but there's another guy in DC Comics, right?
I don't know if you remember, but in Justice League International, the comedy book in the late 80s, early 90s, they had a kind of rival team who were the Global Guardians, who were more international-themed superheroes, and Tasmanian Devil was one of them.
Is it weird that Tasmanian Devil looks like he should belong on Alpha Flight, which is the same sort of idea? Alpha Flight's a Canadian.
Maybe there should be a Commonwealth team where you have Australian and Tasmanian and Kiwi superheroes along with Canadian superheroes. But I like Tasmanian Devil. I like those Global Guardians. Another little bit of trivia. They actually debuted back in, I haven't read these comics, but they debuted in some 70 Super Friends comics. They were picked up in the comedy Justice League International in the late 80s. And I'm not sure if Tasmanian Devil debuted in the 70s or the 80s, but the larger Global Guardians team debuted in the 70s in the Super Friends comics. And anyway, here we have Tasmanian Devil hulking over Hush disguised as Bruce Wayne. Tasmanian Devil fights a villain. I think they're in Sydney, but I just thought it was a cool image. And it's always nice when you get shout outs to the more international sides of DC and Marvel. So I was very happy to see it.
Well, Bob, in this issue, you know, Hush, he's got no money, he's got no wealth, but he has Bruce Wayne's face. So he goes and he takes over being Bruce Wayne after he's found by, like, this actually takes place immediately after Heart of Hush, which I always appreciate when they, like, show him, like, escaping. That was the cool thing. You get the immediate what happened. You're not, like, 2 or 3 weeks later, Hush is in his new hideout. Now, this is Hush literally is walking away from the battle.
It's also a little bit of a procedural because you see how he builds up wealth using Bruce Wayne's face and name and reputation. So it's nitty gritty of that is actually pretty fun.
They didn't skirt over anything here. That leads to one of my favorite panels. It's not really the actual art itself, but it's just the idea that Dini dedicates a full page letting us know that even though Hush is shacked up with Bruce's fling, Connie, who we've met in previous issues, they're not being intimate. Because that was bad. So he lets us know that. I really appreciate that.
Way to go, Paul Dini and Dustin Nguyen.
Way to go.
So our next issue, the part two of this two-parter, the Hush interlude before we get the new Hush status quo in Streets of Gotham, is Batman 685. It's called Cat's Paw. Matt, what goes down in Cat's Paw?
So Catwoman wants to trade Hush slash Bruce for the release of a bunch of caged animals. However, he winds up in the custody of Robin and Nightwing.
I had an art question. I don't want to insult Dustin Nguyen's art. I like Dustin Nguyen's art, but there's a big splash page here where a cat that Catwoman has been keeping in the Vietnamese jungle is, like, leaping at a poacher that's pointing a gun at Catwoman. Was that a leopard? Could you tell? Maybe I should just know Vietnamese jungle cats, and I don't, but I don't know. Did it seem like a leopard to you?
Yeah, it's a rare clouded leopard. It specifically tells you that when Catwoman pays for the cat in the previous page.
Okay.
That's what you get for skimming.
I didn't skim this. I read it. I just missed that. I skimmed part three, Hush to part three. That did not deserve my full attention, but I tried to give my full attention to the Dini detective and Streets of Gotham run. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it is a rare clouded leopard.
What was your favorite panel? If my favorite panel, I now know, was the rare clouded leopard leaping at the poacher. What was your favorite panel?
Well, mine is Catwoman introduces her personal aides, but she does it in a way like we aren't supposed to know that they are Robin and Nightwing. And just to make it clear for the listeners, Nightwing is acting as Batman in these issues because this is after Batman RIP. He's filling in for Batman. But she calls them two names that are Vietnamese. She calls Dick Quan, which means warrior. And she calls Damien Bao, B-A-O, which means treasure.
Despite the name, you would think Batman actually dies in Batman RIP.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't die in Batman RIP.
This is Darkseid laser beams.
Yeah. Final Crisis does take place exactly after Batman RIP. You're still correct. Man, I just want to protect you from all the pedants out
there. I remember that being a major issue with my reading and then putting it back to back. DC is so bad with crossovers. They've got to stop this. That ruins good stories.
But they do kind of like...
They happen simultaneously.
Sort of overlap. I agree with you that the tendency for crossovers is terrible, but this is an interesting example because Morrison is writing both Final Crisis and Batman RIP. So in that sense, it's not as egregious as I was trying to read an Aquaman comic this morning that just ended with like a tie-in to some event from 3 years ago, and I already don't remember what the event was. The whole resolution of the miniseries I was reading hinged on the Justice League dying, and I already didn't remember what it was, and I just felt annoyed and unsatisfied because I'd been enjoying the miniseries up to that point.
Wild.
Yeah,
crossovers can ruin a lot of stuff. It happens all
really
the time.
They really do. It's an interesting paradox because they do the crossovers to, in theory, drive reader engagement and drive reader numbers like in the present of the issue, But then when you're reading stuff on Kindle or you're reading old trades, you're reading back stuff, you just have no idea like what goes where and what's happening in the moment. And so it really damages the evergreen qualities of the comics.
Not the worst part, though, is just any interruption where you have these awesome storylines going on in the main book. And then it's, oh, we got to stop and have an adventure with the Flash that he's going to maybe mention what's going on in Gotham or something, but you're not going to get any resolution for what's going to go on in the main book. Those are the crossovers I hate. But you luckily, know, Bob, we got no crossovers in Streets of Gotham.
I was going to say, though, Matt, I think these two issues we just covered, Detective A52 and Batman 685, are a tie-in. I forget what the initiative was called, maybe Face of Evil, but it was like a month where every comic was supposed to be like a villain spotlight issue. And so Detective 852 is, if I remember correctly, is marketed as a Hush spotlight issue.
Yeah.
Batman 685 is marketed as a Catwoman spotlight issue.
Okay. I didn't know what that meant on the cover of the issue. I'm reading that from that omnibus, and they include the covers in it. It says Last Rites, and then Faces of Evil is what you're talking about.
Yeah, so Faces of Evil is a line-wide DC thing, and I think Last Rites is just a Batman family-specific thing where it's dealing with the fallout of Batman RIP and Final Crisis.
When we actually break into Streets of Gotham, we're kind of reintroduced to a villain that I haven't seen a lot of, and he's always been cannon fodder to me. It's Firefly.
That actually raises my favorite panel of him. We see him in his Firefly cave, which I thought was delightful. I was really amused by it.
Yeah, it gives him a little more serious looking. He's got upgraded stuff. But in this issue, Firefly causes the citizens of Gotham to spontaneously combust by using these tiny incendiary chips. So he's got a little more technical.
It is clever because, like you're saying in your summary of this is Streets of Gotham number one, Ignition, it's a bit leveling Firefly up to his being a citywide threat, right? This is his equivalent of Joker poisoning the water supply plot. That's interesting just for Firefly, who is a jobber. Us growing up in the early 90s, that's how we thought of Firefly. I should have taken the time to research this and I didn't, but I think Firefly debuted in the 50s. And I think in his first appearance, like Killer Moth, they were trying to make him a Batman equivalent character. Oh. He was Batman, but evil. I haven't actually read it, but that's my vague memories of reading a summary of it.
Fire instead of bats.
Him having this citywide plot into the Firefly cave maybe ties back into Firefly and Killer Moth in the 50s being more serious evil Batman doppelgangers like Hush or the Wraith are in Prometheus and later incarnations.
It also fits with one of Dini's ongoing themes with these issues, and that we have this realtor who's selling property to villains for their hideouts.
That is a fun job. That's the type of thing. James Tynion did a little of that in his most recent Batman run of doing a little world building over how is Gotham City this way and how does the world of Batman work. And yeah, just the idea that there's a realtor for supervillain layers is pretty charming.
And this is the kind of thing I would have seen in the animated series.
We'll see this with a later villain, too, in the next couple of issues, but it really does hit a theme that Dini's actually been really good at, both in Detective Comics and in now Streets of Gotham, of really trying to give a lot of attention and focus to these more side villains, whether it's Firefly or the Terrible Trio or the
Ventriloquist.
I've enjoyed that. Him both trying to introduce new villains and also Tweedledee and Tweedledum, really trying to give good stories to C-list Batman villains has been quite enjoyable.
In this particular issue, my favorite panel, it's Batman is shooting this person engulfed in flames, shoots them in the stomach after pushing aside a police officer who has an actual gun and saying, my shot. And then I don't know what, he fires some antidote or something into them that stops the fire, the burning. But there's something about that image of Batman pushing aside a police officer to make a shot that you don't see very often.
Nice. And then moving on to issue number two, it's Streets of Gotham number two, City on Fire. And I did want to ask, Matt, have you ever seen or heard of the Ringo Lam Hong Kong movie, City on Fire?
I have not.
It's a pretty good late 80s Hong Kong action movie. Stars Chow Yun-Fat. Reservoir Dogs is a remake of City on Fire.
In this issue, City on Fire, Firefly tries to murder Black Mask, while Hush uses all this confusion to escape his prison. Now, we forgot to mention, Bob, for the listener's sake, that after Dick and Damien take Hush from Vietnam, they put him in the top of a tower in the middle of Gotham City. It's not Wayne Tower, but it's a penthouse of some sort. And he's at the very top.
I thought it was Wayne Tower.
It could be. I don't know. But he's in the very top penthouse where he's trapped. They won't let him out. He's got everything he needs. But if he goes out in the hallway, he'll be shot with knockout gas. He can't escape. So while he's up there, within one issue, he's going to make his escape. And he uses this whole plot by Firefly to concoct this idea of how he's going to get around Alfred's security.
Dick, Damien, and Alfred just become Hush's private jailers, mostly because of what Hush has done with the Bruce Wayne face. But there's also a general sense that because he knows the secret and because of his long history with Batman and Bruce, that Dick, Damien, and Alfred can't imprison him any other way. But it's fun, and I would say handled pretty well in these issues.
And this does lead to Bob's favorite panel, which was also something that Paul Dini wrote into a lot of his scenes in Arkham City.
Oh, really? You were talking earlier about Firefly trying to murder Black Mask, and so we see a burnt Black Mask running out from Firefly, and he nearly gets his head run over by the Batmobile wheel. I chat panel. The Batmobile wheel stopped just before the burnt Black Mask head. That was good.
Anytime Paul Dini wanted to make something really cool in a video game, just let the Batmobile drive through a wall and run right into the villain.
Another little detail from this issue, Streets of Gotham 2, that I wanted to flag, we see a screen of different images of close partners of Batman or people who know the secret that Dick is using. And at first, do you remember Crimson Fox, Matt, speaking of international superheroes?
Not really.
She's in the early 90s comedy Justice League. She's a French superheroine, and she's actually twins, and they alternate who is playing Crimson Fox, but she's a French vigilante. She's a really cool character. I like both the twins. I like the concept of the character. She's one of my favorite Justice League International characters. And because we'd seen Tasmanian Devil in the first issue in this collection, I was primed to be looking for international superheroes. So I thought I saw Crimson Fox on the screen, which on the one hand, Matt's probably thinking, Bob, you're insane. She's a minor character. Nobody else cares about her. And you have a point, Matt, or at least the version of you I'm imagining arguing with in my head. But like I said, Tasmanian Devil primed me. And also, I don't know if you've ever read the Batman and Shadow crossovers from the late 2010s. But in one of those, they established that Crimson Fox and Batman were both trained by the Shadow, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
So there's a little connection. She still is really small time, but some history of connection there. And so I thought it was Crimson Fox, but then I realized, looking at the index on DC Wiki, that it actually has to be Talia. And I just thought it was funny that, like, the type of cowl that Crimson Fox has, it's actually very easily mistaken for the way Talia has that swoopy hair from, like, the animated series.
Yeah.
That just made me laugh.
I'm not familiar with the character Crimson Fox, so I Googled her while you were talking. And yeah, powers and abilities. She's agile.
Like a fox, Matt.
Like a fox. All right.
Fox. Matt, what was your favorite panel in Streets of Gotham number two?
Well, Bob, my favorite panel, there's this scene, okay, after Hush busts out, he immediately tries to hold a press conference. He knows he's got to do it quick. So he's outside holding a press conference, and everyone's watching, and it's being cast nationwide because Hush, Bruce Wayne, has decided to give away billions of dollars every day. And, of course, Ra's al Ghul is watching this from his luxurious little TV thing with his ninja costumes hung up in the background like Batman would have in his Batcave. You think Ra's al's like a Ra's cave?
He definitely does. That's what we're finding out, is like the lairs and the cribs of all the Batman villains. Yep. That's really the theme of this arc.
And it's weird too, because it's not Ubu that's serving him. So, I mean, I guess he's got a butler too. We don't know about.
Ubu's the bodyguard, right? He makes his hands free. Yeah, he can't be doing the butler work.
Well, that's my favorite panel, Bob.
I love this development, like you say, that like Hush's way of getting back at Bruce Wayne is to give away $1 billion a day. It's a really great revenge. And it also is really interesting because it makes me think about this, and I hadn't thought about this at all, but this Dini run and the simultaneous Grant Morrison run are two of my very favorite Batman runs. I think they're great. And I never really thought about the fact that they both are taking place largely during the Great Recession, largely after, they both start before it, but now we're in, I think you were saying 2009, 2010.
Right.
And so we're a year or so after the big real estate bubble bursting. And you see that reflected a lot in this story with having a realtor be a main concern, this issue of villain real estate, this issue of Hush using the Wayne fortune as a stimulus package for Gotham City. And it just really is funny to think about that historical context, both for this and also for the Morrison run at the same time.
You look at the final page where the people are so happy that Hush is giving away this money, and their faces, they're so excited, those people.
We had one other question to close out Streets of Gotham 2.
Do we like Garfield Lenz being so smart? This guy, he's figuring out technology type stuff. He's got this really cool armor now. He's working on the same level as Black Mask. I always liked him more like a henchman, just type of dude. Just background
Matt
type
will
bad
only
guy.
Think about him as he is in Batman 89, the NES game.
Yeah, not a challenge for Batman.
My man did build a fire-resistant suit that, depending on the version, can either fly or glide. And, I mean, it's a pretty impressive technical feat, even in the DCU. So, I mean, definitely there's reasons in the character to think he's smart.
It was just the nanotech stuff is just too much.
Nanotech is a lot.
Yeah.
And I was praising the historical context of how this comic uses the Great Recession moment in an interesting way. But I think you're right that the nanotech are dated and are that annoying type of tech hype you would get in the late aughts and the early teens. So that dates the comic in a bad way, I agree.
We can't describe how it works, so we'll just call it nanobytes or nanotech.
Really small, just trust us.
All right, Bob, so let's
look
at issue three.
Of Gotham number three, Hush Money.
So Bob, an escaped Hush, disguised as Bruce, starts spending Bruce's money.
My favorite panel here was we have, in retaliation to this, Damian just blast Hush out of Wayne Tower, and I thought that was a really fun page.
That was one of my favorite images, too, because it's not low-key. You see Bruce, he's in an elevator, and then all of a sudden there's a bat bomb on the side, and he goes, oh, and then there's an explosion, but he doesn't just fall down. He flies out of the building. Damian has to, like, swing in and catch him. It's not just an explosion. It's a big explosion.
It's pretty great. And then I also wanted to flag, just speaking of my affection for more minor superheroes, or these are more big-time superheroes than Crimson Fox and Tasmanian Devil. Matt's heard of these two heroes.
Yes.
But because of the problems with Hush looking like Bruce Wayne, Dick and Damian and Alfred have to draft the members of the Justice League and the members of the Outsiders who already know that Bruce Wayne was Batman. So they have to draft them to mind Hush, watch over Hush. Two of my favorite characters that get spotlighted in this are Creeper and Katana, who I both have long had a lot of affection for. It's really fun to see Creeper and Katana interact with Hush. It's really funny to see Damian crushing on Katana. He wants to ask her out. That's really cute. So I really enjoyed that dynamic of this issue and the next issue.
My favorite part of that, Bob, was the actual reveal, because you have Zatanna saying a word backwards. And I originally thought that was supposed to be the lady's name, but it's actually Drop Illusion written backwards. But then you flip the page, you see all these heroes that are put on babysitting duty for Hush. I like seeing these heroes that they didn't go with, like, Superman and Wonder Woman. This is the current, this is the whole JLA.
Some of them are outsiders. Creeper is a 10 are outsiders, but this is the Brad Meltzer era Justice League. Black Lightning and Roy Harper, things like that. Black Canary.
So this is the whole, well, dang, I didn't forget that. Well, wow, yeah, they got the big guns just to watch Hush. Okay.
Because I think at this point, Superman's walking across America. And at the same time, I think I'm right in saying that, because this is all right before the New 52. So I think Superman's not in the Justice League because he's busy walking across America. And Straczynski, although it's less remembered, also took over Wonder Woman at the same time that he took over Superman. And so he did a weird story called Odyssey that I honestly don't remember any details from, but he gave Wonder Woman a leather jacket instead of her traditional costume. And I think she was out of the Justice League and out of, like, mainstream superheroing for about a year or two there, too.
That's on every list of things that should never have happened.
Definitely the Superman Grounded, the Straczynski story where Superman walks across America, is, like, all-time awful story.
Yeah.
Right? The Wonder Woman one, from what I remember, is it's not good. In no sense is it good, but there's nothing as catastrophically stupid about it as Superman Grounded.
Well, Bob, we do get another big change. And like you said earlier, that Dini's reinventing some of these villains. We have a new look for Zaz. He's sharper looking.
You
he wears bandits.
Do I like this look? He wears bandits. Do I like this look? I don't know. I'm kind of a traditionalist for Mr. Zazz. Although I think in a prior episode, I was saying that Mr. Zazz is not a versatile villain. He just has to do his creepy serial killer thing. And you can't really imagine in like Mr. Zazz and the Riddler having a plan to take over Gotham together. But Dini 2009, he heard that some dumb podcaster was going to say that in 2025. And he's like, no, I can make Mr. Zazz a more traditional Batman villain.
I imagine him showing up in this fancy suit, and then by the time he's done murdering, he's naked with his tally marks all over him, looking like a sicko with his tongue sticking out.
His jacket shorts and his tally marks. Matt, have you ever read the Garth Ennis series Hitman?
I've read some of it.
Do you remember the gag where Hitman gets hired to go into Arkham to assassinate the Joker? And it's a really good gag because his booker also picks up a bunch of other small contracts for him of shoot this person. A gun dealer tells him to shoot Mad Hatter in the knee and say, pay what you owe, things like that.
I don't think I ever read that one.
Oh, it's great. And then, like, he doesn't get paid to deliver a message to Mr. Zazz, but he walks by Mr. Zazz, and Mr. Zazz pops out against the clear plastic jail cell thing. And Tommy, the hitman, just looks at Mr. Zazz, and he's like, no thanks, I've seen the movie, and keeps walking.
All right, Bob, so Streets of Gotham, issue number 4.
Business. Goes down in business, man.
A lot of business, Bob. Hush keeps spending Bruce's money, but he's doing this under the supervision of the Justice League, while Mr. Zazz purchases a new hideout from the Realtor of Criminals.
And my favorite panel from this final issue of Hush Money, Streets of Gotham Volume 1, we have a great thing of Creeper. I believe he's under an illusion spell from Zatanna, like Matt was describing last issue, but we see this shadow silhouette of Creeper in the disguise menacing Hush's silhouette as he's disguised as Bruce Wayne, and I thought that was a really cool visual. Dustin Nguyen did a really great job on that.
My favorite scene is at the end. You see an image where Damian has taken out the Realtor's assistant, and he's just sitting there reading a real estate flyer while Batman's handling business in the other room. There's just something about the image of him just sitting there that really cracked me up.
No, it's great. And I mean, Dick and Damian, I don't know how much you remember their run in the Batman and Robin book that Morrison was doing at the same time, but Dick and Damian are just the best team ever. Dick and Damian are, so, in some ways, a much more fun partnership than Bruce and Damian. Every time you do a Bruce and Damian as Batman and Robin, it's got to be all about, oh, their relationship. Yeah. Is Bruce a bad father? And is Damian a budding serial killer? But Dick and Damian can just be a hoot together.
I agree. And let me ask you something, Bob. Can you tell it's Dick in the suit by the way it's drawn?
Not always, but I do think in some scenes, Wynn is good at signaling the difference.
Yes.
And I also think Dini's good at sometimes signaling the difference in the dialogue. I would say that was the interesting thing about this era where Dick was Batman and Bruce was dead. Some of the comics really do play up that it's Dick. And some of the comics, you could read it and it doesn't matter. It's just Batman. And so you could just read it and not even think about it.
And see, that's how I feel at certain times. But other times, I will say that with the art, I think I've seen enough of the way, I think the artists specifically draw, there's a specific style they use when drawing Nightwing poses. And they just took that same style book and used it in here in this, which I think is really cool. You see it. I don't know what it is, but it's just something with the way he's positioned. It's not the exact same as Batman. And I was impressed with myself for being able to catch on. You've read so much Batman that you can tell the subtle difference between the way this character's standing, who's underneath that cowl.
Matt knows his Nightwing posture, and he knows his Batman posture.
I'm like a Tim Drake, Bob.
Oh, man, that's funny. Speaking of costumes, Matt, the last thing I wanted to say about Streets of Gotham number 4, we get to the debut in the Dini run of a villain who has been referenced an awful lot in the Dini run because they were trying to make him a big thing at the time, and that's the Great White Shark. And we see him in a Hawaiian shirt, which that just cracked me up. I laughed for a long time about that image. Wynn did a great job drawing it, and just the weirdness of the Great White Shark in the Hawaiian shirt, very funny.
Man, Great White Shark was so hot back then.
And that Dan Slott Arkham Asylum miniseries that introduced him, man, it's great. We should look at it. Some good miniseries.
Owned all the individual issues. It was good stuff.
Before we move on to a much worse comic, I did want to ask where you're at with ranking the Paul Dini run thus far. So, you know, we've looked, for listeners who remember, we've looked at 4 volumes of Dini on Detective Comics, and then this is our first volume on Streets of Gotham. So I think I would rank them Death in the City, number 1, Private Casebook number 2, this volume, Hush Money number 3, Detective number 4, and Heart of Hush number 5. Does that sound right to you, or would you switch it around?
I agree with that ranking, especially where Heart of Hush is. Heart of Hush should be there. To me, it's a mediocre story compared to some of the other stuff we have here that just, a lot of it stands out. Nothing in Heart of Hush stands out other than just the actual removal of the heart.
I'd agree with you. I don't hate Heart of Hush. I definitely think it's the best Hush comic that I've read until this. But yeah, to me, it sits on the bottom. And I do think this Hush Money, I mean, granted, I'm not sure where the rest of this run goes, but I think for right now, I find this like a really clever, really interesting use of Hush. And I'm really glad to finally actually read it.
Hush has done better here.
He's causing issues for Bruce, but he's doing it in a really creative and not stereotypical supervillain way, like we saw in the original Hush and we're about to see again. We jump ahead to Hush 2.
His chaos cannot be necessarily controlled by, you know, a punch to the face. Like, it's also not necessarily bad chaos to some degree. It's good stuff for Gotham, in a sense.
It is funny that he's actually giving Gotham a stimulus package in the midst of the Great Recession. Yeah. Well, Matt, before we go on to Hush 2 Part 3, I did just want to tell listeners, so, you know, we'll wait till the next issue of Hush 2 drops before we do another volume of Streets of Gotham. But we'll be doing Volume 2 of Streets of Gotham, Leviathan, which was a trade paperback that covered issues 5 through 11. So that's what we're looking at for around, I think we're probably about 3 weeks away from the next Hush 2 issue.
All right, Bob, so breaking into Batman number 160, which is Hush 2 Part 3. First off,
the listeners need to know the title of the issue.
So anyway, I want to point out something, Bob, just from the get-go. When we enter this, we're right back at the beginning where Jason Todd is over Batman. I wanted to point out, did you notice that Jason Todd now carries a crowbar in his back? Like on his back.
I wonder, is that a Jim Lee idea, a Jeff Loeb idea, or did somebody else have that idea first?
I don't know. The fact that it's all wrapped in red tape, like he's a Ninja Turtle.
I did speed read through a bunch of Red Hood comics a month or so ago, and I don't remember him ever having the crowbar, but I was definitely speed reading because their Red Hood comics have not been good up to this point.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I guess this is a Jim Lee. But Bob, I want to ask you, do you think a Jim Lee thing was to give Hush a bandolier and a X-shaped Hush belt buckle that looks like it goes over his crotch?
Yes, that's a very Jim Lee thing. And it's also a little weird how like red the bandolier is. Like it gives him like a matching outfit with Red Hood. It's very strange.
Yeah, it's that alone caught my eye. And then we get to my favorite part, Bob. This is before the title's even been shown. I just want to keep this in mind. He throws a scalpel into the barrel of Red Hood's gun. When is Hush always been this marksman dude with knives? I always thought he hired out people.
Didn't he do some knife stuff in the first one?
He had those little blades that he had in his hand, but they just, I don't know. I like him to be at least somewhat realistic to some degree. I don't think he should be a character that has everything Bruce has. Martial artist, all this other knife throwing, gadget wielding. I don't think he needs all that. On the splash page with the title, The Knight, there's a callback to an image that Jim Lee did of a huntress on a motorcycle. If that image is like making your brain itch.
Yeah. I can't remember if Hush used knives in the original Hush, but I can never forget my annoyance with the huntress splash page on the motorcycle. I think you like it because you remember it being a cool image. I remember it because I hate it, because if I remember correctly, that's where we first really see the new Jim Lee huntress costume that I just detest. And so it's burned into my mind because of that.
First appearance of her costume.
So, all right. Matt, there's a lot of machinations in this issue, like between Red Hood and Nightwing, and between the Riddler's new alliance with Nightwing and Batgirl. I don't really care about this either, but I guess the more interesting thing I just wanted to flag was I was a little surprised when reading this issue this morning how committed Loeb and Lee seem to be to introducing new characters this issue. We've got this scalpel lady who's very 90s with her arms turning into some sort of liquid steel scalpels. And then we've got this big dude Batman is fighting a few pages later, a Hush henchman, just no-selling Batman's punches. I could easily see these characters never appearing again and never mattering again, but I did think it was interesting that Loeb and Lee seemed committed to trying to introduce a couple of new Batman villains in this issue.
especially with the character with the metal powers.
She looks like she belongs to me in Witchblade or in Jim Lee's Wildcats from the 90s with like her liquid metal knife arms.
Yeah, like a T-1000. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely there a huge Terminator influence.
Her name is Armory.
Armory.
He was in the first issue, and oh, I thought they gave him a name that it wasn't anything to write home about.
I almost want to just call him Brick Wall because Batman compares hitting him to.
It's the wall, bro.
Yeah, and they both Armory and Brick Wall do also very much have the vibe of an early 90s WCW wrestler fighting Hulk Hogan.
Well, the one dude looks like The Rock in that Disney movie, Moana.
Batman's fight with the guy I'm going to call Brick Wall because I didn't remember him from the first is interrupted by Damian and Bane jumping in through a glass window. And just like Red Hood has made an alliance with the Joker, and just like Batgirl and Nightwing have made an alliance with Riddler, Damian has made an alliance with Bane. And Damian is yelling, "Sick 'em, Bane," to get Bane to get Brick Wall to stop from beating up on his dad. That's the first moment, especially after how much I hated issue two, that Riddler issue. I actually like that happened. I was like, you know what? That's cool. That's funny. Jeff Loeb has got me. That's actually a neat moment. It's almost like Bane is Damian's Galactus, like Franklin has Galactus as his herald. That is funny. Now, if you think about it, it makes no sense, right? Because Bane killed Alfred and Damian is never going to forgive him for that and is probably going to forgive him for that at some point. But setting aside any concerns about continuity.
I didn't even put that together, but yeah. Why is Bane in this comic? I didn't even put that together yet. Jim Lee, they're really not doing anything with continuity here. Why is Bane showing up? Are they friends now? Because we haven't seen Bane since the death of Alfred, right?
I don't think so, but there might well be something.
This makes this so much worse.
Obviously, we were saying earlier, I never assumed that Hush 2 would reflect anything that had happened to Hush since the first Hush story, nor did I assume it would reflect any continuity at all. So I'm not surprised that it doesn't. And it is interesting that Loeb and Lee are bringing in Bane as like another recognition character when he wasn't in Hush 1. So that is another interesting way they're trying to up the sequel quotient of bigger, better, more. And then I guess the only other thing I could say to sort of defend it is, remember before the Tom King run, DC, because of that Gotham Knights run we read, then also because of his committed to Bane, the antihero, before Tom King turned Bane evil again and had the big climax of Bane killing Alfred in City of Bane, DC actually was committed to antihero Bane for a number of years there. But
we do in the issue, Bob, with three Robins die tonight. Is he going to kill? He's got a scalpel up against Damian. Damian's not going to die.
Does. Well, that was the other thing I wanted to complain about, is it's a great moment of, at least in some ways, Bane and Damian busting through the glass to save Batman from Brick Wall. But then through just no setup at all, just the next page, the final splash page, is Hush has outflanked Damian and has the scalpel to his neck. So that really didn't really make me angry. Loeb writes a great Damian moment, and then he's like, but you know what? Damian sucks, and Hush is the best. And he undermines this moment to have Hush threatening a Robin with a knife. It's like, oh yeah, we didn't see that 100 times in the first Hush series.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally the whole thing with Tim in the original Hush, same setup. Where are they going to go with this? Was he going to kill all three Robins? Do we really need a dead Robin? It doesn't need to be Damian. He's not going to kill Dick. Jason will come back anyway.
I assume it's a fake out. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I just assume it's a fake out.
I think you're right. But you know, somebody's going to die. They have to kill somebody just to make it.
You had asked if we'd seen Bane at all since City of Bane, since he killed Alfred. Totally forgot how this went because I never read it. I never finished reading it because it wasn't very good. But it looks like Bane showed up in Tinian's Joker series.
Okay.
And then there was a 12-issue Bane maxi series called Bane Conquest that I never read. And honestly, I'd heard of, but had totally forgotten about. So it looks like it reunites Bane with our favorite trio of Bird, Zombie, and Trog. So I don't know. There's Bane Conquest out in the world somewhere.
Gonna have to go read Bane Conquest after this to get caught up on if Bane and Batman made up after Bane murdered his butler.
After Bane murdered his father. Yeah.
And then he's like, sick him, Bane.
I just don't see a universe where Damian and Bane make up, though.
No, I don't, Bob. All right,
well,
Bob.
So the wild ride of Hush 2 continues, Matt. It doesn't make this issue, at least, doesn't make me as angry as the last one.
Don't let DC fool you, folks. This is not the real return of Hush. We have seen Hush come back many times. And honestly, we've seen Hush come back many times in better ways.
Say what you will about Hush Returns, but it's more interesting than Hush 2.
I agree with that 100%. And Heart of Hush, I mean, honestly, it's at least it was different.
We'll return when Hush returns in a few weeks as we check in on the new issue of Hush 2, and we'll be back with Streets of Gotham Volume 2, Leviathan. And looking forward to seeing you listeners there. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. We are Uncanny Treks. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.